As far as India is concerned, it's very clear that the Chinese have come in and we are not willing to accept that.
India and China back off from their disputed border. It's Monday, September 14th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Follow us online at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Myanmar marble in demand. U.S. presidential debates loom. Extreme weather, leaving New York, women voters, and drive-in movies return. It's all on today's VOA Asia. India and China have agreed to disengage their troops and de-escalate tensions that flared following a fresh dispute along their contested border in the Himalayan mountains. However, analysts say overcoming their differences will not be easy. Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi.
Pristine Pangongso Lake in India's eastern Ladakh region is where a four-month-long military standoff between India and China intensified recently after the Indian Army said it occupied hilltops when it noticed Chinese troop movements in the area.
There used to be that buffer which the two sides would respect. I think what has happened in recent crisis in the last few months is that Chinese have tried to gain an advantage over India by encroaching upon that buffer. And India is now realizing that they also need to have those kind of tactical advantages on the ground if they have to manipulate or if they have to manage China along the border. So I think that has led to this very peculiar kind of escalation.
The foreign ministers of the two countries agreed to disengage troops at a meeting held in Moscow that came days after both sides accused each other of firing warning shots for the first time in 45 years. Long-standing protocols forbid the use of firearms.
I would say it's very tense, and I stress the word very, because there are large number of troops massed on both sides, estimated 40,000 plus. More reinforcements are being brought in.
Overcoming differences will be challenging. Previous calls by New Delhi and Beijing to de-escalate tensions have failed to translate to action on the ground, with neither backing down from their differing perceptions of their disputed border.
As far as India is concerned, it's very clear that the Chinese have come in and we are not willing to accept that. They must go back to where they were. The Chinese position is that when, we are where we should have been. So that is the problem.
Restoring calm on the border will be key to repairing damaged ties. India has banned scores of Chinese apps, including the hugely popular video game PUBG and TikTok. It has restricted Chinese firms from infrastructure projects since the military standoff.
Unless that is in some ways resolved to the satisfaction of both sides, I don't see a likelihood of a normalization of this relationship. Again, underscoring that the trust has completely gone from this relationship.
That is why there are concerns whether the call to disengage troops will yield quick results.
At the least, it will be a long winter. Both sides dug in, tiring each other out, testing each other. Hopefully, it doesn't go beyond that.
That means the India-China border could continue to be volatile. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
As the story develops, we invite you to read more by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia. And you can find more on our story at voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Afghan civilians say ceasefire a top priority for intra-Afghan talks. Pakistani police released journalist accused of spreading hateful content against army. Overcoming India-China differences proves challenging despite border accord. Young protesters force Nepal to better manage virus crisis. The price of Beijing's vaccine diplomacy in Southeast Asia. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found daily at Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Faces covered in white dust and chisels in hand. Marble sculptors in Myanmar say the hills that have given them a livelihood for generations are disappearing, as large companies reap the rewards of the prized white rock. VOA's Keith Lane has more, narrated by Ira Melman.
The deafening sound of cutting and grinding machines, punctuated by the tapping of hammers and chisels, echoes around the hills next to Sagyin Village, north of Mandalay, Myanmar. The mounds, lined with jagged edges from where huge chunks have been cut, are the country's prime source of white marble, cherished as far back as the reign of King Mindon Min in the 19th century. Ko Lei, his wife, and their four children have carved a niche for themselves as the go-to sculptors for animals, making around $360 for each elephant, lion, or tiger figure. As he fashions the haunch of a 3-meter-tall feline that will one day guard the entrance to a Buddhist pagoda, he explains how important the hills are to everyone living in their shadow.
The entire village depends on this mountain, and we're worried it will disappear soon. We want this mountain back.
Like others here, he points the finger at shadowy Chinese and military-linked companies who were granted decades-long licenses over swaths of land under the previous government. Locals have always regarded the marble-rich slopes as their own and accused the outsiders of plundering their resources with explosives and excavating machinery. About 80% of the village of some 2,000 households work in the marble business, but people fear they're being pushed out. 55-year-old marble craftsman So Win says the big companies will destroy the hills until they're gone.
Since it's now in the company's hands, they can take it just as much as they want. They won't care if marble sculpting disappears. I'm very worried if it will still be here for future generations.
In recent months, a few dozen plots have been allocated to the villagers, says Un So Yin from the Ministry of Natural Resources and Environmental Conservation. But craftsman Yun Wai has not heard about the leases and is skeptical that locals will see dividends anytime soon. Wai says he learned to work with marble from his parents and grandparents when he was 14 years old and has built up a clientele as far away as Vietnam, Indonesia, and Australia.
The village's blood streams through these mountains. It gives us livelihood. This work keeps us alive, but we're scared our mountain will disappear and there's nothing we can do about it.
For Keith Lane, I'm Ira Melman, VOA News, Washington.
Now that you've heard our story, see it. Follow us on VOA Asia at YouTube. Happening now in Asia, a U.S. Marine convicted in the Philippines of killing a transgender woman was released from prison Sunday after receiving a pardon from President Rodrigo Duterte. Lance Corporal Joseph Scott Pemberton served about half of his 10-year sentence for the killing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new week. We started off with you on VOA Asia. In this busy U.S. election year, a big event is coming up next on the calendar. September 29th is the first in a series of debates between President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. VOA's Steve Reddish looks at the campaign road ahead.
This election will decide whether we save the American dream or whether we allow a socialist agenda to demolish our cherished destiny.
Now that the conventions have ended with Republican President Donald Trump and his Democratic Party rival, former Vice President Joe Biden, making their opening arguments.
This is a life-changing election. This will determine what America is going to look like for a long, long time.
Both candidates have gotten onto the campaign trail, honing their messages to voters in key states ahead of their first face-to-face debate on September 29th.
I think that we can expect to see a rowdy debate between the two presidential candidates.
Jennifer Murcia is a communications professor at Texas A&M University. She says both Biden and Trump are fighters.
And he isn't shy to do that, to mock people or to bully them during a debate. He did that in 2016. And with Joe Biden, what we've seen from him, you know, he sort of has a longer history of doing debates in politics. And what we've seen from him is that he's very willing to stand his ground. We saw in 2012 that his vice presidential debate was similarly, you know, I think it, to Trump in style, in that he sort of mocked his opposition a little bit.
Presidential debates have largely kept to a format of the candidates answering questions from a moderator.
It is actually informative to see both candidates in contrast to one another. So to hear how they speak, you know, the tone they use, but also to hear about their policies. It allows them to directly accuse one another of doing things, and it also allows them to make rebuttals so that they can defend themselves.
John Koch is the debate director at Vanderbilt University. He says there needs to be an evolution beyond what he calls press conference soundbites.
The debate would start with, here's the issue or the situation. You have 30 minutes or whatever it is to meet with your consultants and advisors, and then we want you to come back with a position, explain your position, and then we'll have a debate about how you arrived at that decision, and then the, you know, the quality of those decisions.
Whether viewership this year tops the estimated 84 million Americans who watched the first debate in 2016, it is questionable how many voters it will sway.
A lot of the research on presidential debates have shown that it kind of lets people identify with the candidate that they kind of already identify with. It just kind of lets them see who shares their positions, right? There's not a lot of evidence per se that it changes, presidential debates change minds.
I really think that, you know, for these debates to have any kind of effect like they should, the audience itself has a responsibility to listen with an open mind.
According to Pew Research, 10% of 2016 voters said they decided their vote during or just after the debates. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Details are emerging about how two privates in the Myanmar army who confessed on video to committing atrocity crimes ended up in the Netherlands. The two had arrived in Bangladesh in mid-August seeking protection. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are all very aware that this year our home planet has got a lot going on. Fires in California have turned the skies orange. Flooding in Senegal and Sudan has farmers worried about the future. And fires have broken out in Beirut's port following last month's massive explosion. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us a special week in space with Eyes on Mother Earth.
This is the port of Beirut, 1 month after a blast that was so powerful it was visible from space. The August explosion of ammonium nitrate stored in a port warehouse killed almost 200 people, injured thousands of others, and destroyed homes and buildings in a vast area of the Lebanese capital. The latest fire is in a tire warehouse, according to state media. The cause remains unknown. Meanwhile, in Sudan, authorities and the United Nations are providing aid to tens of thousands who lost their homes in recent record Nile flooding. Local resident Idris Ahmed wants international help.
What is the role of government? Nothing. They're not doing anything. I'm asking for rights as a citizen, looking for refuge. I go right, I go left. Is this something anyone can accept?
Across the continent, in Senegal, the town of Karamassar remains underwater after clouds dumped 3 months' worth of rain in just 7 hours over this area outside the capital city, Dakar. The flooding is creating even worse hardship for residents.
We are flooded. We're all going through the same problem. It's serious. Some people left. Some people are unable to reach their homes. Firefighters are helping evacuate with boats. It's really difficult.
Finally this week, residents in California report awakening to orange skies raining ash as wildfires exploded out of control. In one day alone, climate scientists say one fire expanded more than 1,000 square meters. More than 14,000 firefighters are battling the California blazes. Two of the largest in the state's history are burning in the San Francisco Bay Area, though after 3 weeks, those are mainly under control. However, wildfire season has just begun. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
We continue now with VOA Asia. The economic impact of the coronavirus continues to linger in New York City, where lines to pick up donated food are still much longer than usual, according to a local charity group. Food Bank for New York City says it has distributed 30 million meals to New Yorkers. That's triple the number compared with last year. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports.
Food Bank for New York City says more people are showing up to receive food donations compared with the same time last year.
Year to date, we typically distribute about 10 million meals at this point, so we have already tripled that.
Janice Robinson, vice president of Food Bank for New York City, says she doesn't see an end in sight.
Sadly, New Yorkers are still struggling. People are unemployed and they're still having a need for food. Their children are being kept home, so those children aren't getting their meals at schools. So the need is only increasing.
Many in the line said they had been laid off because of the pandemic, and some said they were working but couldn't make ends meet without the help of donations.
It's a long line. But too many people, they need food. We don't have no job, they lay off.
Some say costs also seem to be going up.
The kids are home, you're spending more money. It's like, come on. Then you have to buy equipment, you know, in order for them to be schooled properly at home. So you're spending more money and not receiving more money.
As people line up for food, the White House and Congress still haven't agreed on a second aid package. The last stimulus package provided $600 a week in supplemental unemployment payments, but that aid has expired in July.
I prefer working than have to be sitting there collecting a check every week, but you know, it helped. But now that we're not getting nothing at all, I don't know, I'm going to pay my bills now.
Republicans and Democrats appeared to be deadlocked over a new stimulus package. The U.S. Senate on Thursday killed a $300 billion coronavirus aid package as Republicans and Democrats disagreed over the size and scope of the aid. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Doctors are warning that the global death toll from diseases like tuberculosis, malaria, and HIV could increase sharply this year because of disruption to health services caused by the coronavirus pandemic. One report warns that malaria deaths in Africa could double in 2020. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Sibongile Zulu is among the 7.7 million South Africans who are HIV positive. She takes a cocktail of antiretroviral drugs to suppress the virus. When South Africa imposed a coronavirus lockdown in March, Zulu lost her job. Weeks later, her local clinic began to run short of some medication.
I think for 2 months, I was using only one that I was supposed to use two. And if I don't use both of them, it's a big risk. I can get sick.
Across the world, doctors say the coronavirus pandemic and the subsequent lockdowns will likely hamper the fight against other killer diseases like tuberculosis or TB, malaria and HIV. Epidemiologist Dr. Salim S. Abdul Karim advises the South African government on the coronavirus and has led research into other infectious diseases in Africa.
I must take your treatment.
people are scared to go to healthcare services, we have seen a decline in the number of tests for tuberculosis. We've seen a decline in the number of patients coming in to get their medications. So that's of deep concern because it could undo the years of work that it has taken us to get to this point.
TB cases and deaths have fallen year on year in South Africa and many other countries, but it remains one of the world's biggest killers, with an estimated 1.5 million deaths last year.
We know there's a 50% decrease in TB testing in South Africa at the moment, so people are not able to go to the clinic or go to hospitals and so on, and they're not being diagnosed with TB. And this means that they can then transmit TB further to other people. So it's just going to sort of snowball.
Malaria deaths in Africa could double in 2020, warn researchers from Imperial College London, unless disrupted services such as mosquito net distribution and malaria treatments are maintained. Despite the dire forecasts, Karim says there is opportunity.
The opportunity to look at integration. Integration between COVID, HIV, TB, and other conditions, so that when we are investing for our coronavirus vigilance, we are benefiting not just the COVID epidemic, but the epidemics of HIV and TB as well.
The global community must look at the bigger picture, says McQuaid.
We stand to lose gains that we've been making in recent years, hard-fought gains that we've made, and we could be pushed back 5, 10, 20 years even.
Huge resources have been dedicated to the fight against the coronavirus. Doctors say it's vital that other deadly diseases are not neglected. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Drive-in movie theaters were once a big part of American car culture in the mid-1960s. But air-conditioned theaters eventually put most of them out of business. These days, with movie theaters shut down because of the coronavirus, drive-in theaters are experiencing something of a renaissance. VOA's Tawhid al-Islam visited a drive-in theater in rural Virginia and filed this report narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
For months, Americans have been without the joy of seeing their favorite actors on the big screen because of the pandemic. But while there aren't many new movies coming out right now, there is still a place people can go to catch a movie safely. It's that relic of an older America, the drive-in theater. The Stevens City Drive-In Theater in Western Virginia is about an hour and a half away from Washington, D.C., but that's not stopping a lot of viewers.
I used to come here a lot when I was little, and I love the experience. I haven't been in a few years since then, but I just wanted to come back and see what it's all about.
It's really nice because you're outdoors, you can see the picture. Much, much larger than you're in a regular theater.
All the way back.
Thank you.
There used to be thousands of drive-in theaters in the United States, but today there are merely a few hundred left. But some that remain have become local institutions.
Theater is a local icon, so to speak, for us, and we enjoy the movies they play and just the atmosphere that they present.
Theater management says drive-in theaters are naturally following social distancing, since everyone either stays in or camp outside their cars. One thing that has changed, patrons dial in their movie via FM radio, because the speakers at each parking spot could possibly transmit COVID.
Some of our classic speakers are covered up. Those usually you can connect them and put them in the car, but they're made of the same material as playground equipment, and according to all CDC, it's a potential virus transmission spot.
Yet with cinemas slowly coming back online, it remains to be seen if this nostalgia for drive-ins will last. For Tawhid al-Islam in Stevens City, Virginia, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Thank you for joining us today for VOA Asia. And while our program has concluded, you may carry on online at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, all under the name VOA Asia. We thank those who help getting this program on the air each and every day, our managing editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.